Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown, the Match Day 5 recap podcast. I am Sam Leverage and I'm joined today by Rory Barley. How are you today, Rory?
I'm good. What an evening of football. Apart from the sort of genuine disappointment of Real Madrid pulling it out the bag, I am pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, we're all kind of hoping for Valencia to be top of the league and give us something a bit different, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of us thought that the headline was going to be Bordalas there, but in the end, Real Madrid do what Real Madrid do, and they come back and they find a way to win. I think there's a lot of people who would have enjoyed seeing that 1-0 result, but fair play to Vinicius and Benzema, who come up big yet again for Real Madrid.
Yeah, so let's get started. There are obviously lots of action this weekend, Rory, but let's get started with that Sunday night late kickoff. Just kind of the big headline fixture of the weekend. What did you think of Real Madrid? How did you kind of evaluate their performance?
I have to say, I wasn't particularly impressed. I think Real Madrid, for my mind, they've sacrificed a lot in defence this season in favour of sort of freeing up the attack a little, but they showed relatively little in this game to trouble Valencia. I don't think I remember Mamardashvili making more than one or two saves, to be perfectly honest, and until those last sort of 10-15 minutes when Valencia dropped off a little, they didn't really trouble them too much, and that was credit to Valencia on the one hand, but also there's questions to be asked, and I think it was the same thing we saw against Inter. If Inter had managed to finish some more of their chances, they could have been in real trouble.
Yeah, and I mean, with Valencia as well, you had to feel bad for them. I mean, in the first half, losing Carlos Soler, who's obviously been one of their big players at the start of the season, and Thierry Correa came off in the first half as well. I mean, two big players to be losing to injury. And José Bordalás was kind of operating with one hand tied behind his back, wasn't he? I mean, the players were working that extra bit harder, adjusting the system, changing, and you felt like this was always going to be really difficult for Valencia to keep up that same pace and rhythm and pressure right until the end, and Real Madrid do what Real Madrid do. I mean, you've mentioned Inter, but even going back to last weekend against Celta Vigo, I mean, Celta Vigo were giving them a really good game up until kind of the hour mark, and then the fitness just made the difference. So, I mean, with Real Madrid, do you think this is kind of the grit and steel of a team of champions, or is it a team that's going to get found out eventually and they're going to start dropping points?
I'd be reluctant to say that they're going to get found out, because if I look at the other teams in La Liga, right now Valencia are about as good as it gets in terms of general play, in terms of being convinced of an idea and really taking the game to people. So wherever they get found out in La Liga, I think it's a question of other teams managing to be solid and shut Vinicius and Benzema down. I think that's the key to marshalling Real Madrid at this point. But there's certainly an argument that if they do come up against better teams or teams that maybe manage to keep a clean sheet, there isn't that defensive solidity that Zidane really counted on. And yeah, Valencia showed that today. I think Gedge really should have put one away as well, and they paid for that in the end.
Yeah, and we've heard Haz Karim on the podcast before saying about Ancelotti and his "we will score one more than when you approach," and that was evident again at Mestalla, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And Valencia, I mean, let's take time out to really praise them, because they were excellent for about 70, 75 minutes and really were the better team. I think over the course of the 90 minutes, most Real Madrid fans would find it hard to deny that Valencia were better than them. But football is a game of 90 minutes, and when you do have that quality of Benzema, it can open a game up for you and win you games when perhaps you shouldn't.
Exactly, and that's what Real Madrid did. But Rory, a question for the whole weekend. What was your best moment of the weekend?
My best moment of the weekend, I mean, I'm going to have to say Doko and Hugo Doro. I think the way Mestalla erupted, and it's been fun having fans back, but what a moment. And Hugo Doro, already sort of legendary in the minds of Valencia fans for that sort of cup moment against Getafe, and now he's sort of announced himself pretty well on his debut.
It was good. But I think for me, it has to be something else. Hugo Lloris, a great young guy. But we have to look at the La Liga legends as well. And we have Falcao back in La Liga at Vallecas, making an impressive debut, coming in on a sub and scoring as well, as Vallecano came up against Getafe in a Madrid derby. So let's hand over to you, Rory, as you spoke to Robbie Dunn, a famous Rayo Vallecano fan, to speak a bit about that game and Rayo Vallecano's start to the season under Andoni Iraola. But first, let's listen in to some of the commentary of Falcao's historic goal, where one commentator got a little bit overexcited about the return of El Tigre. Listen to this.
Falcao! Goal, 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 goal! Goal! Un Tigre anda suelto en la sabana vallecana!
Welcome. I'm joined by Robbie Dunn, who is the author of Working Class Heroes, a book about Rayo Vallecano and sort of the surroundings of that, and it's well worth reading. But he's also an expert on the football side of things. It's a more socio-political dive into it. How are you doing, Robbie?
How you doing, Rory? Good. I don't know about being an expert on anything, but I appreciate the kind words.
No, definitely. It's certainly worth getting your views on what happened at Rayo. In the end, it was a bit of a thumping of Getafe, 3-0. They looked pretty good. And I saw Jamie Campbell on Twitter tweeting, "Permission to get excited about Rayo staying up." Do we have permission? What are your thoughts on that game yesterday, Robbie?
I think so, yeah. I think we do have permission in the sense that what we've seen from Iraola, and it's a kind of a continuation from what we saw in the Segunda and how they kind of managed their way through the playoffs, is that he's really good at time management and game management, and knowing what subs to make at what time, when to kind of push, when to sit back, when Rayo notices a weakness now. And in the past, Rayo would have been very naive under the likes of Paco Gemes. Even recently, the last time Rayo were in the Primera, they couldn't hold on to leads, didn't know how to kind of play when they were leading, and didn't really get the feel of the game. Whereas under Iraola, it feels like he knows how to play against maybe not, we haven't really seen him against the better sides, because the Sevilla game was unfair in that Zidane got sent off after like 13 minutes. But against teams that they should be beating, I think Rayo have every chance to win a lot of points against them, and that's partly down to the signings that they've made, but also down to Iraola knowing how to use those signings and how to manage a game.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, and speaking of signings, we couldn't glaze over sort of the arrival of Falcao with quite a bang. He scored on his debut, just 10 minutes it took him to thump one into the corner. What does this signing mean for Rayo in terms of sort of their prospects of staying in the division, but also just in terms of star power, Falcao?
It's huge, and it's kind of surreal a little bit, because you know, you get excited about signings or the possibility of signings whenever your team is... any summer when you're talking about transfers and things like that, and there's a whole market out there based on that in the media. But in terms of, especially when your team gets promoted, you're like, we're going to have to bring in 5 or 6 big names here, and you're linked with all different kinds of players and things like that. And with Rayo especially, it feels like when you're watching it, you get linked with different players, and I don't know, people like, for example, Kubo, Take Kubo from Real Madrid. There was links with players like that, and you're kind of thinking, wow, that this could be incredible. And they end up kind of not materializing. Whereas when Falcao was mentioned and they kind of close to the very end of the transfer market, it was like, I mean, firstly, he's a huge name, really exciting footballer. Secondly, he's exactly what Rayo need. They've lacked goals. They've lacked like a focal point. And just him coming in, and we saw yesterday the way he took his goal, that kind of clinical finishing. It wasn't even a, I mean, I haven't seen the expected goals or anything like that. I don't know. But it wasn't even that good of a chance, but he absolutely walloped it home. And that's the kind of strike that Rayo wouldn't have scored in the recent past. And I think he just adds both star power and, practically speaking, he adds a lot to this Rayo team going forward.
Yeah, to borrow a term from Spanish, he is the definition of a killer. He is a fox in the box. He will score those sort of half chances. In his presentation, there was a moment where the president, Presa, was loudly whistled as he tried to speak, and it was hard to even hear what he was saying. Such was the sort of reception he was getting. Could you just give us a bit of a background on what's been going on at Rayo recently and why there's such animosity towards Presa?
Well, basically, the Raul Martin Presa has been accused, and I think rightly so, of not investing enough in Rayo since taking over the club back in 2011, I believe. And he has not only not invested in the first team, but in the women's team, in the academy. He's cut budgets. He doesn't look after the stadium, and there's a kind of an agreement. He rents the Rayo Vallecano rent the stadium off the community of Madrid, and he feels like, why would I put money into this when I don't own it? And they're saying, well, it's up to you. Like it's your responsibility. And I mean, you go to the games, and it is nice, and it's kind of annoying because I probably. Partly to blame here in this as well, like, kind of romanticize the whole Rayo experience, and it is quite a nostalgic experience going to Vallecas, old school, working class, a great match day experience. But at the same time, like, when you're walking into the stadium and there's like barrier, like there's construction being done, and it's not properly health and safety, it wouldn't pass a health and safety inspection, and when there's bird crap on your seats, and when there's no toilet paper in the toilets, and no toilet seats, and just kind of, it is quite nasty, you know. And I think the fans deserve more. And then the big thing, I guess, is the kind of the political divide between the two. And I don't actually know if Raul Martin Presa has ever spoken about which way he is, left or right, or whether that distinction can be clearly made. But he invited the leaders of far-right party Vox into the stadium last year. And this, as far as people from Vallecas go, and as far, this was a provocation of the highest magnitude for them, a working class, very majority left wing neighborhood, inviting Vox, a party that have openly campaigned against immigration, LGBTQ rights, things like that. And you know, it was a direct provocation, and that's why. And I think that's the kind of thing. Whatever about the investment into the squad, that's a financial thing. That's a business matter, you could argue. But the political stuff is very, and it came at a time when they couldn't invite, there was no fans in the ground, so there was no one there to kind of whistle him, or there was no opposition to him inviting those people, and they just saw it as kind of a cowardly provocation of the people of Vallecas, the neighborhood that he owns a team in, and that he is supposed to represent as the owner of that team, and a club with a proud history. And I think that's the kind of thing that they just can't forgive.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fascinating, and I'm sure this won't be the last sort of story we hear coming out of it. We can keep across that on the Twitter on @LaLigaLowdown. But I will thank you very much for that insight. It was really good to listen to, Robbie. And yeah, thank you very much for that.
That's no problem at all, Rory. Anytime.
Cheers, and I'll throw it back to you, Sam.
Yeah, all is not well in Vallecas with Martin Presa there. He's a peculiar case, but we've got plenty of other peculiar cases in La Liga this season. And one of those, Rory, is Celta Vigo at the start of this season. I mean, a squad which is kind of jam-packed with talented players. Cacho Cudet, who really kind of settled in very quickly in Vigo last season. But they've not had the best of starts, and they lost on Friday night, a 2-1 defeat to Celta Vigo, despite dominating all of the statistics. I mean, they had 80% possession, 7 shots compared to just 5 for Cadiz, but Cadiz scored with both of their shots on target. I mean, are Celta in trouble after this start to the season?
I think they'll be okay. I don't think they're going to get relegated. I'll put that out there. They are, I don't want to say too good to go down, because they've very nearly teetered on the brink of that before and come very close to doing so. But I think Chacho is a good enough manager to get them out of this. I think he's shown that. But it was pretty marked, the sort of contrast between them last season. They beat Cadiz 4-0 in this fixture and played one of the best halves of football that I saw in the first half. They were 3-0 up. Best halves of football that I'd seen in that sort of season. And so the total sort of lack of ability to get through Cadiz was pretty worrying. But I mean, Cadiz have done this to better teams than Celta as well, and that should also be taken into account.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's kind of what we've come to know Cadiz by since they came back up, really. And Alvaro Cervera has kind of instilled that into his team, these kind of smash and grab. We'll grab a goal and then we'll just sit back and defend and fight for our lives. And that's kind of what they've got so good at, isn't it, in La Liga? And I mean, those two goals in the first half as well, kind of in quick succession, really important for Cadiz. I mean, these are the points that they need to pick up this season if they are going to stay up. I mean, 5 points from 5 games from then, that's a pretty positive start.
Yeah, definitely. And they did so without Alvaro Negredo, which is pretty monumental for them in a sense. He came on towards the end, but to get their sort of two goals without him, he's very much the sort of hook on which Cadiz revolve around and sort of build their attacks through. So to manage that was quite impressive for me, and they were missing a couple of players. Certainly that midfield has been solidified with Alarcón in there. He looks really, really good, like a very solid signing. And Cadiz, they're opportunists, and they're very organised, and that gets them enough points. And you have to credit Cervera, because let's not forget that when they come up last season, many of us were predicting them to struggle. Many of us didn't think that they quite had the quality to stay up. And they brought in a few new faces, but this is still a squad that largely won the promotion in the second division.
Yeah, and we've already spoken about some of the late drama this weekend at Mestalla, but what about Real Betis Espanyol? I mean, these two teams last weekend, Betis had an 89th minute winner against Granada. Espanyol conceded a 99th minute winner from Atletico Madrid. So, of course, there was an injury time equaliser, in this one. It was Espanyol who scored in the 98th minute. I mean, was that a fair result for both of those teams?
It was a strange game. I thought Betis had about 30-40 minutes of football where they were absolutely liquid. It was flowing. It was Canales all over the shop playing some of the most wonderful passes we've seen so far this season. And Betis were really, really good, but they did have that start where they sort of looked a bit shaky, conceded. Aleix Vidal scored the Espanyol goal, and then it just all collapses. And I think it's hard to ignore that it coincided with Canales going off. He is the sort of the conductor of that team, and although Nabil Fekir continued to be very good after that, they did struggle after that. And the thing with Betis is they don't think their supporters deserve nice things, because Germán Petzela gets sent off in like the most ridiculous of circumstances. You're 2-1 up at home, you're trying to see out the game, and there was just no need for it. And Manuel Pellegrini is an experienced manager, but he must just be tearing his hair out at the sort of errors that his team makes.
Yeah, exactly. So just to touch on one more game from this weekend, Roy, I'm going to quiz you a little bit. Mm-hmm. Right, 1-1, 0-0, 0-0, 2-0, 2-0, 0-0. What does that mean?
That means that there are not enough good strikers in La Liga. That's my answer.
No. Well, it's Villarreal's results this season.
Oh, God.
They've drawn every game they've played. And obviously, with no Gerard Moreno today, he pulled out last minute before their game in Mallorca. And it was another 0-0 draw. their third of the season. What kind of spark does Unai Emery need to get from his team if they're going to kind of convert these draws into wins?
I think Unai Emery, and this is something that was a concern for, I think, many people last season, was that Villarreal just aren't attacking enough, and they don't, whatever Emery's doing defensively, and he is very organised, there was a lot of nils in that sort of list that you read out. He's not freeing up his attack enough, and Gerard Moreno was very much sort of a one-man charge in a sense last season. Jeremy Pino came on, and he sort of helps things out. He's a little bit more electricity. I think I compared them to a wood burner of a team, just because it's so slow and deliberate, and everything's just congested. And yeah, I think he needs to be more attacking, and that's a very simplistic take. I appreciate that, but this team has a lot of good attackers, and Danjuma, Bulaidia, they had Pino on as well. They have more talent to break these teams down, and there's not really an excuse after a season now, and it's a run of form that sort of continued into the back end of last season, for Unai Emery not to be scoring goals with this team.
Exactly. I mean, we'll have to get you down on the next flight to Villarreal to go and chat to Unai and tell him to attack a bit more. Great, so stay tuned as we're going to have a quick break now, but after the break we'll be talking to Jeremy and Phil, Atletico and Real Sociedad fans, about their fixtures this weekend and also analysing our picks for the matchday MVP.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to part two of our Matchday 5 recap podcast. There were 3-0 draws in La Liga this weekend, but they were certainly not dull. We had red cards, penalties being missed, hitting the woodwork, all sorts. So first of all, let's head to the reigning champions Atletico Madrid. So it was a feisty and heated draw against Athletic Club. Let's tune in to the most controversial moment of them all, as Jesus Gilmanzano decided to send off João Félix for 2 yellow card offences in the space of just a few seconds.
Centro del campo a favor del Atlético de Madrid.
Bueno, esto no lo entiendo.
No, es falta a favor del Atlético y amarilla para João Félix.
Por soltarle sí. El brazo.
Se queja vencedor de un
roja. Ojo, ojo. Le ha sacado la segunda amarilla, Ruiz.
Segunda amarilla. La primera no se entendía. La segunda, João Félix le ha contestado.
I'm joined by Jeremy Barron of Into the Calderon to discuss that game and the controversy as João Félix was sent off. Jeremy, how are you?
Doing well, Sam. How are you today?
I'm good. So, Jeremy, we'll go straight to the big talking point. Jesús Gilmanzano, the referee, showed 4 different yellow cards for dissent, and he didn't quite get on the right side of the Atleti fans and the Stadio 1, the Metropolitano, either. What did you make of his performance?
Very poor performance. One of the more inexplicable refereeing decisions and displays as a whole that I've seen in some time. Gil Manzano is not a very popular figure among Atletico supporters and among Atletico players either, for a host of decisions he's made in the past. Most recently last season, when he missed a handball in the buildup to a Sevilla goal in Sevilla's eventual victory over Atletico at the Pizjuan. And this time around, it was such a strange and, as I said, inexplicable decision to not only book João Félix at all, but then subsequently send him off for getting fouled himself. It was a very, very weird decision to cap off a very weird and frustrating couple of games for Atletico.
Yeah, I mean, it's the only time I think I've ever seen Diego Simeone tell a referee to calm down. I mean, when Diego Simeone is telling you to calm down, that's a big deal. But Jeremy, I mean, João Félix, was he a little bit foolish, naive, a bit silly to give Gil Manzano that decision to make?
Yeah, it was a little petulant and a little immature of João. Knowing that this particular referee is very reactionary, this particular referee is not one for conversation. Multiple Atletico players after the game spoke about how Gil Manzano would deliberately step away or step back from players who try to start a dialogue with him. Not the first time that complaint has been lodged against him. So if you're João Félix, you do not want to give him any ammunition whatsoever. And that is what happened, though. From the player's perspective, I understand it. It was a decision that I'm sure he wasn't even remotely expecting, because his jersey is being tugged and the arm, João's arm is flailing out as he's, you know, running, as he's running with the ball, moving at a high speed. And he's got to be thinking, wow, I'm the one who's being shown a yellow card when my jersey is the one that's being tugged. So he's got to be a bit confused and thinking that that's a strange call. But at the same time, you don't want to add any fuel to that fire. This is a referee who is known for having a pretty short fuse and a short temper. And he unfortunately inadvertently played into that. And now we'll see what the possible consequences are, whether there's a lengthy suspension coming his way.
Yeah, I mean, it was Diego Costa with Gil Manzano before, wasn't it, that spoke up against him and ended up with a lengthy ban. But let's talk kind of about the football and what was going on the pitch. So, I mean, for Atleti, 4 days, 2 home 0-0 draws. What's going wrong for Atletico Madrid? I mean, especially in attack, why is it not quite clicking in the last few games?
Yeah, it's 3 straight draws at home too, which I'm not sure has ever happened for Atletico at the Wanda Metropolitano. The past 2 games in particular have followed kind of similar patterns. Atletico started slowly, didn't really improve until the second half. But against Athletic, I think the performance was better. Simeone spoke after the game about how the team played faster. They played with more tempo, more rhythm. The changes in the second half really worked. And I think Atletico were trending toward getting that eventual winning goal until the red card. Marcos Llorente had just hit the post. Yannick Carrasco was playing very well. I think the difference in this performance is that the play was faster. The tempo had increased. The rhythm was better. Rodrigo De Paul played a great game in midfield. With no Koke and no Lema, I thought Atletico's midfield held up really well, but they're just not creating enough chances. That's the big problem, is that guys like Griezmann and Suarez and Correa just aren't getting any bites at the apple. And when you're not creating that many golden chances, when you're not creating that many shots, it's difficult to score goals, especially against organized opposition. Porto and Athletic are two very, stop short of calling them defensive teams, but they're very organized counterattacking teams. So that those are difficult opponents to face back to back, but Atletico haven't been able to pick the lock. They're just not creating enough opportunities yet.
Yeah, and I mean, Luis Suarez, we touched on him there a bit, but I mean, he's beginning to show maybe the signs of his age. I mean, he played on Tuesday night against Porto and Wednesday night, sorry, against Porto, and then against Atletico he came on as a sub, but he doesn't quite look in the rhythm of things, does he?
No, he doesn't look sharp yet. And you know, it's only been half a dozen games for Suarez, and he has in the past been a bit of a slow starter. He did have a long summer with the Copa America and an extended vacation. Based on his track record, you have to think he comes good sooner rather than later, perhaps as soon as this week against Getafe. But Yeah, it hasn't been a good start for Suarez. He looks pretty slow. He looks isolated when Atletico are pushing forward in the attack. There's just seems to be a disconnect between those two lines, the midfield and the forward lines. And Suarez, more than anyone on this team, needs that service because he doesn't move very well anymore. If you get him the ball in the box, he's going to make something happen. But Suarez hasn't really been getting the ball in dangerous positions. And yeah, it's also a function of Simeone still trying to find the best partner for him. Now that there are even more options to choose from in attack this year, it's about trying to find the best partner and it's about trying to get him back into a rhythm. So still a lot of variables up in the air for Suarez. I still think he comes good, but it's been a concerning start for him.
Yeah, and I saw a great article from you guys at Into the Calderon on your attacking options at Atletico as well earlier this week. So check that out if you haven't already. Thanks for joining us, Jeremy.
My pleasure, Sam. Thanks for having me.
So, Rory, we spoke to Jeremy, and what did you think? I mean, we heard Jeremy's take there that Atleti can be fairly optimistic despite these 0-0 draws at home. Are you as optimistic as Jeremy?
I think you have to have faith in Simeone to be able to work this out. There is a lot of talent there. And part of that, I think, is the mentality. I think if you get Griezmann sort of rewired a little, in my view, then you do have a quality player. Suarez, it's always been a case of him playing himself into fitness. So I think there is reasons for optimism for Atleti fans. My one sort of concern would be whether they can work out these teething problems in time to not be left behind.
Exactly. Another team that's been struggling for goals is Sevilla, who drew another blank this time up against Real Sociedad. So let's hand over to you, Rory, as you spoke to Phil Ball a little bit more about Real Sociedad and how this was almost a missed opportunity for them to take points up against Sevilla.
And I'm joined here by Phil Ball, the expert on everything Real Sociedad, and we've just seen La Real draw with Sevilla 0-0. It was a pretty good game that sort of kept threatening to have a goal, and it kept threatening to burst into life. Mikel Oyarzabal obviously missed a penalty, which was the best chance of the game. But what did you think of the game, Phil, and how do Real Sociedad view that? Because it's a point against Sevilla, but also perhaps could have been a little bit more.
Yeah, I thought in the end it was a fair result. You know, I thought Real were the better side in the first half. It was Seville were strangely passive, I thought, actually, and they didn't seem to be particularly interested in attacking. Lopetegui was going insane on the touchline just below me. You know, I was watching him. He didn't seem very happy with matters. But something I were playing quickly and vertically, they were playing a kind of 4-4-2, which is quite unusual for them. They had Isak and the new guy Sorloth both up front. They were kind of exchanging positions all the time. One was dropping and one was going forward. But Real don't normally play that system. They had Porto on as well. And, you know, I suppose also the fact that Real had actually been playing on a Thursday night, then only got back on Friday, and they actually had one training session. Sevilla were more rested. But they came out playing quicker. I thought Sevilla edged it in the second half, possibly. So a fair result, despite the penalty, you know.
Yeah, you spoke about Sevilla being better rested, and Real Sociedad, they obviously had a really good season last year. They won the cup and they finished in Europe again. But there were certainly spells, I thought, where they were lacking a little something. Today they ended up bringing on Germán Valera, a youngster as well as Julen Lobete. Do they have the squad depth to sort of carry out another sort of charge for European football in La Liga and deal with the Europa League this season?
Well, it's, you know, the fact that Lobetti and Valera came on is half glass half full, half empty, isn't it? I mean, what's the interpretation? I mean, in my view, it's glass half full. You know, I'm a bit of a saddo. You know, what I can do now, I can actually go to one of it every weekend now, and I can see a game, because the reserves are the only B team in the second division, which is amazing, you know. And so the fact that they've got them in the second division, they've got Lobetti and Valera playing every week in the second division, means that the step up to that kind of game is much more plausible or feasible, let's say, you know. And I think Xabi Alonso is not necessarily too pleased about never quite being sure who he's going to have in his first team at any weekend, you know. But Valera played particularly well, I thought, when he came on. Lobetti's already, well, he scored against Barca in that, after his first touch. He's a good lad as well. Mm. I mean, there's a lot of good players in that Sanse team, the B team. So I would take that as a positive, actually. I think there is depth in the squad. I think that the problem with Real this season, like last season, is that the whole squad seems strangely and mysteriously prone to injury, and we just seem to have six or seven major players always, you know, in dry dock, and the local press are very kind about it, but I'm a little bit less kind about it, and I'm not quite sure what's going on. I mean, Isak went off in the first half today, you know, didn't seem to be, it looked like a hamstring or a pull or something. He didn't actually, nobody kicked him or anything, you know. So I think that's one problem that we've got to sort out, but you know, it's I think that was also an issue last year, and probably the reason why we finished fifth and not fourth, which Seville finished fourth, you know.
Mm. Yeah, and you mentioned Isak there. I for one actually thought that the partnership of Isak and Surlov, which maybe unconventional for Agüero, it's not something he does often, is playing sort of two up front, but it really troubled Sevilla at points, and maybe they didn't get the clear chances they wanted, but they were the better team, as you said. Just what is it that Surlov can add to this Real Sociedad team that maybe they were lacking?
Yeah, it's interesting that he did that. I think he probably did that because Lopetegui wasn't expecting it, you know, and I think that he was a bit, I really think that's why Real were dominated the first half, because Lopetegui's tactical setup wasn't designed to look after two forwards like that, you know, and then he had Porto playing on the left, and he got Oyarzabal over on the right. Well, he had a good first half for Oyarzabal, but he tired, you know. I think Soloth, from what I've seen of him, that's the first time I've seen him play almost the whole game. You know, he's big and he's strong and he protects the ball well. I mean, for a big guy, he's pretty skillful. What was interesting in the second half, I was talking to my mate watching the game, was that he started to look a bit annoyed with things. And Soloth was getting annoyed with the service, or at least it wasn't, there was a lack of service. It was just that Real still have to play this kind of tiki-taka stuff, you know. They get to the area and they still have to do tiki-taka. Nobody just knocks in a quick cross. And Soloth's obviously a guy, if you watch YouTube, who can attack the near post. Mm-hmm. He can win it in the air. He was troubling the Seville defenders in the air, you know. And yet there was twice where he sort of criticised a couple of Real players for not getting across him more quickly. And I think the problem is that Real Sociedad is so, they've got this system so automatized, you know, that they can't stop doing it, you know. They just think they have to do about 15 passes in the area before somebody shoots. Soloth's a different kind of player, and I think that if you've got him on there, you've got to think about that, particularly when Isak went off, you know, that there should have been quicker crosses, getting them in quicker, maybe Januzaj getting them in more quick. He did that just towards the end. But so I think that you know, it's horses for courses, isn't it? I think that Real have got to learn to adjust to the kind of player they've got up front. And I don't think they actually did that well today, although Soloth himself, I thought, played well.
Yeah, interesting. And I think it will be good to see sort of Agüero deal with a different kind of prospect with Soloth up front. But I will thank you for your time, because we do have to pass it back to Sam, but it was excellent hearing the detail that you could give us again, Phil.
That's okay. Yeah, no, my pleasure, Rory.
A pleasure. I'm back to you, Sam.
Okay. ciao. See you. Bye.
So now it's time to discuss the MVP of Match Day 5. So let's get started with you, Rory. Who's your first pick for the four nominees?
My first pick is Ugodoro Toko. For me, he just embodies Jose Bordalas, and he's not the player that's sort of most talented in this Valencia team, nor was he in the Getafe team, but Bordalas requested him, and for a reason, because Hugo Lloro, playing out of position on the sort of left side of the Valencia sort of midfield, he did a really, really good job, and he kept Real Madrid quiet while he was there. He finished his sort of one chance that fell to him, and that really opened the game up for Valencia. And as we were saying, I think Valencia deserved it over the course of the 90 minutes. Hugo Lloro embodied the performance of Valencia while he was on the pitch, and it was just unfortunate that he didn't score the winner or at least earn them a point this week.
But and I feel like I need to say it for the Madridistas. Would you not go with Vinicius, Rory? I mean, a goal and an assist late on in the game. I mean, he's been spectacular this season. Maybe the early on in the game he wasn't at his best, but I mean, he's been a match winner tonight.
Yeah, Vinicius was decisive, and I think that is incredible praise for Vinicius, because there's been so many times where he could have been and hasn't. And I don't think Vinicius was the best sort of player on the park, to be put it very frankly. He was good at times, and he was a threat still, but it was only that sort of last few minutes where he became decisive. And let's be honest, his first goal was a deflection, and if it goes straight, it goes straight to Mamardashvili. And the second one, yes, okay, it was a decent ball in, but Mamardashvili also shouts for that ball, because you can see Gabriel just before it. He stops, he's about to head it, and he stops, he puts his head down, he thinks Mamardashvili's getting it. And if Mamardashvili fulfills his obligations to get that ball, then Benzema doesn't score.
I can feel the Madridista rage coming in already, Rory.
I welcome it.
But if we are going to talk about guys who kind of dominated the game, then I think for me there's only one guy who did that in the whole weekend, and that's Pathesis Raya. I mean, the headlines, the star of the show was Falcao, but I mean, he got the second goal for Raya just when they most needed it, when Getafe were upping the pressure. And then he assisted Falcao for his goal a few minutes later. I mean, he really kind of bossed that whole game in the middle of the park. I mean, up against Getafe, I mean, Getafe's midfield is not a bad midfield. I mean, in Nemanja Maksimovic, he's a very kind of experienced and talented central midfielder, but Sis kind of played him off the park. And this is a guy who's only got a handful of a Primera División appearances. So for me, I think Sis, for his all-round performance, I mean, that's what sets him apart this weekend, I think. I mean, involved in two goals, important defensively, and bossed everything in the middle. I mean, for me, that's what an MVP is. And so I think Pathé Sis has to be one of the players in the shortlist.
That's a fairly good case. And what about that pass for the goal?
Magnificent. I mean, it was, you would forget that it was Rayo Vallecano that you were watching. I mean, that pass, which was kind of perfectly weighted, perfectly positioned, and then Falcao, who finished it like he was back at Atleti at the peak of his powers, and it was magnificent stuff from Rayo. I mean, if they can produce that a couple more times before the end of the season, then relegation will be the least of their worries.
Definitely. For me, I'm gonna have another candidate here of a slightly different ilk and style. Pathesis was smooth in midfield. He was very well rounded, as you say. Pacha Espino is pure fight. The Cadiz left back for me, and I've been on the Pacha propaganda for a while at the start of this season, because his form has just been fantastic. And he is, similarly to how I was saying that Hugo Douro embodied the Valencia performance, Pacha Espino is Alvaro Cervera's sort of right hand or left hand man in this case on the pitch, because he's dogged, he's aggressive, he's opportunistic. That goal was pure sort of being alert and getting there ahead of his defenders and the Celta defenders. And yeah, I think for me he really sums up this Cadiz team, and he's playing at a level, because apart from his sort of good defending and his Uruguayan-ness, so to speak, and being very solid, he is really good on the ball as well. Some of the crosses that he puts in are of high quality, and so for me he's another candidate that I think it's worth looking at.
Yeah, and I think the final candidate from my point of view has to be another fullback, but on the other side this time and down in Andalusia, but Hector Bellerin. I mean, he's come into Real Betis, I mean, his boyhood club, and he's made a really strong start. And I think up against Espanyol he was involved in everything. I mean, the defence, he was rock solid, and going forward, he set up Nabil Fekir for the second goal for Betis just on the stroke of half-time. And it was one of those kind of dominant displays from a right-back where you keep seeing this guy coming up. I mean, almost a bit Trent Alexander-Arnold, Dani Alves-esque in a way, that you see this guy coming up in attack, in defence, and thinking, right, the right-back isn't supposed to be there. But that's what Hector Bellerin was doing. I mean, this is what Arsenal fans, if they've been tuning in to watch a little bit of Betis and see how he's getting on, that's what they'd be wanting to see him doing. I mean, that was almost what he was doing at his best days at Arsenal, and that's what Betis will be hoping to get out of him now. I think up against Espanyol, he produced one of those displays that shows what he can do on his day.
Yeah, it was a very serious performance from Bellerin, and he's become something. I think some people have been a little humorous of his performances at Arsenal lately, but he looks like a real asset to this Betis side and has really opened things up for them. I totally agree with you there, Sam.
Great, so I think we've got our four then. I mean, I wanted Vinicius, but you want Hugo Lloris, so we'll go with that. Pache Espino, Patesius, and Hector Bellerin. So make sure you jump onto La Liga Lowdown's Twitter at La Liga Lowdown on Monday to get your votes in and choose our MVP for match day 5. Great, so thank you very much for joining me this week, Rory. We've got a midweek match day coming up as well, so I'm sure you'll be tuning into all the action this week.
The football does not stop, and I will not stop watching it.
Doesn't stop. Champions League, La Liga, midweek La Liga, another La Liga, it doesn't stop. So stay tuned this week, keep tuned on the website where we'll have a new post up on some talented youngsters at Barcelona. We'll also be covering all the action on Twitter at La Liga Lowdown this week, and we'll be back later this week with another podcast analysing and seeing if Real Madrid can keep top spot and make it their own, or if there will be maybe even a sacking or two, as we know that there are a few managers coming under a little bit of pressure. Michelle. So, thanks for joining me, Rory, and thanks to all of you for listening. Stay tuned, and as we go out, let's just listen in one more time to that dramatic ending at Mestalla.
Va a buscarlo otra vez Vinicius, centra Vinicius, Benzema, gol, 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 y gol de Karim Benzema, gol, 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 del Madrid, marcó Karim Benzema, pelota que pone Vinicius, falla.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.